good?
The bad.
Thinking.
Hello, welcome back to The Good, The Bad, and The WTF, What I Thinking. And it is episode 87. 87, and we're still in November. I feel like November is
talent.
Dragging its ass, isn't it?
No, it's gone quite fast for me, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The holiday in between, it feels like
We did. It just feels like it should be Christmas. Feels like it should be Christmas already.
Christmas always starts a month earlier than it should do, though, isn't it? I mean, I've already been hearing Christmas songs on the radio, so it's
there.
Here. It's announced itself. I put up the tree. It's Christmas.
Yeah, I know. I would never have had you down as a November tree up kind of guy.
I got the probably next year not, but this was a new tree. I needed the visual idea of what I was going to stick on the thing, so I needed to stick it up.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, if you don't put it up soon, suddenly everything's been bought out. Things are just going so quickly. Everyone buys too early. And normally I'm way too late.
Yeah. They do. There is something about it. I don't know how you did it, how you put the tree up. Did you have like music blasting in the background? You know, simply. You did it in silence. Did you have a movie on?
I was singing. I was singing the song, if you want to know. I was singing Joy to the World as I was doing it.
It's very festive.
I needed silence. I need silence when I'm thinking, when I'm plotting where I'm putting the ball bells, because you have to like spread them out, and then you get tree blindness, don't you? Because you look at it and you're like, that area still looks blank, and then you go over there and you think, put a ball bell there, and suddenly it's like it's just congested. You're like, and you step back and it's blank. You go forward, it's congested. You're like, what's going on here? It's like some weird sort of mirroring trick.
You got to be very, very tactical with it. You got to be very, very tactical. The worst part is pulling the fucking branches out.
Oh, fucking hate that.
Isn't it? And that's the worst bit. Because that's when the gaps are there and you're like, what the hell's going on this side? It's always the case of like, if you have it against the wall, which most of us do, you spin it so the side that looks the shittest is facing the wall, so you can have all the nice full branches at the front. You know, it's like sweeping it under the rug sort of thing.
And the top is just all bunched together, and that's the other one. It's just for some reason the top, you keep spreading it out, and I swear overnight it just like just all forms itself together again.
Do you have a star at the top?
I haven't got a tree top yet. I can try and find that. Okay. I wanted a star, but I mean there was a lot that were like glittery. I was covered in glitter by the end of yesterday. I had glitter all over my face. I can still see, like, you know, I'm walking on the carpet, I can see little shiny bits, and I know there's glitter there. And it's like styrofoam. You just can't get rid of it.
It's messy. Do you know what? If you can get this question right, then well done to you. But do you know what when we were growing up and we always had, like, tree decorations, we always had like the same ones kind of in rotation, occasionally we get some new ones. Which one do you think is the most iconic tree bauble, let's say, because it was a bauble? What was the most iconic one? Because I know exactly what I think of.
There's so many mix and match ones. I'm trying to think, because there was one, the iconic
it was my favorite.
The iconic one I remember is one that I think I got our parents to buy, and then when we started to have mini trees in our bedrooms, I used to put that on my mini tree, which was a bauble. It was a Santa one. I think it was like red and blue, if I remember rightly, and it had Santa on it. So that's I can't remember it in detail. I'm trying to think of what we had, because we had used to have the chocolate ones. That used to always get eaten. It was a bit of a mix and match. It wasn't like an idea, was it? It was just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks.
which I kind of liked, because it was like through the years, it was like, this is the old. You had the old ones, you had the new one. Now, my favorite, the most iconic one, I think it was also the most well-made one, was the little robin. Do you remember that?
Oh, the robin, yeah.
And the
top of the tree.
You sat it on a branch. And then it used to sit at the top occasionally, but it worked its way down, I think. And then you it would have like the little things attached to it, and you would tie it to the thing at the bottom, and it would just sit on a branch. I always thought that looked the best. It also looked so old school. There's something like so authentic about it. I loved it.
I was trying to find things like that. I tried to go to some antique places and find like them vintage kind of baubles. I couldn't find it. Everything these days is like covered in glitter, and glitter's just a messy job. Don't want to deal with glitter, but I wanted something like that robin. I forgot all about that robin until you said it.
Did yeah. you? See? That's the one that always comes to mind. I can see it now. I don't know where it is now. You know, who knows where that is now? That
lost in time.
Could exist somewhere. Could be lost in time. Yeah, where did these things go? Has it been binned? Who knows? Was it left in the loft when we left? I hope not. But that is sad that it probably was.
I'm trying to think what else we had. Because we had like... There's some ornaments, weren't there? The old candles. Remember the old Christmas candles? They used to come out. And I swear there was a Santa ornament. Used to have the old like plastic things you stuck on the walls, like the faces of like the face of Santa, the face of Rudolph, the reindeers, and all of that. Remember that? Yes.
Do you remember the Santa boing boing?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Oh, boing and yeah. Because we used to always tease the dog and throw that. And, the dog used to go, what the fuck are you doing?
Dog used to hate it because it made a noise. Or the hip hop Santa, I had that one. Yeah, that was good. Good times, hip hop Santa.
Yeah, I remember the hip hop Santa.
Just repeat what you'd say. It was funny because what I used to do is I used to say the dog's name and then the thing would start saying the dog's name. Fred would look at it like...
That's it. Is it like...
or like Honey would look at it like, what the hell's going on?
It used to go, my name's Hip Hop Santa, and I'm here with my best friend. And then you go, Adam. And you go, like that. I remember that, yeah.
We go, Adam. Yeah, it would like alter your voice slightly as well, make it a little high pitch.
I just think it was probably a bad microphone, probably fixed it. It's probably cheap.
Probably.
So that probably was another reason. Maybe the old tablecloth used to come out, the Christmas tablecloth as well. Yeah.
That always used to come out. Loved that. Every base was covered. There wasn't a single bit that wasn't Christmassy.
I imagine if we had the photos, which I haven't seen for a while, I imagine it all looks very tacky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but it did. In the early noughties, late 90s, it always looked tacky, didn't it? That's the way it's meant to be. That's how I see Christmas.
Tacky. Just tacky. Just tacky.
It is tacky. I mean, I've just had a turkey feast sandwich from M&S. And I imagine the calories of this is absolutely horrendous.
It's probably a lot of sugar, a lot of cranberry in it.
Actually, not too bad. 420 calories. That's not too bad. I don't think that's that bad. But the salt is 1.92, which is 32% of my daily intake already gone.
Well, that's why you had to guzzle down that water straight after you... at that sandwich.
I did guzzle down that water, yeah. I'm a big fan of a Christmas sandwich. I don't know what it is. I think that's always been my favourite bit about Christmas food. Just absolutely stuff in my face.
Well, the,
it's always been my favourite bit. Cupboard, and I'll never hold back.
The Christmas cupboard's getting full. It's getting fuller now. Like, I'm just adding bits and bits as we go in.
You just buy weird stuff that you wouldn't buy any other time of the year.
I buy things with, like, a Christmas theme to it. I'm the sucker. Like, they could get me, like, so quick and fast.
Yeah,
like,
you are a
sucker. Just like, if you stick Santa on it, it's like, that must be Christmas. It's like, it's Pringles. It's no different from any other Pringles apart from Santa's on it. And it's like, well, it's Christmas.
The Pringle thing does look good. Or if they get you with a new combination. Yeah. You're a sucker for a new combination. I am, yeah. They're like, two things that are together that you've not seen together. You'd be like, it must be good because it's passed the test to be on the shelves. So I'll give it a try. Let's give these a try. And I'm always like, what the hell is that?
And you say this, but there actually are things that are in that drawer. So there is salted caramel peanuts. Two things that you were like... turkey...
The curiosity, you know, killed the cat. You're like, I'm in...
Cheese ball things. They've got a turkey version of it. A turkey cheese ball thing which tastes like turkey. Things like that, it's like, oh yeah, that sounds like, that's good, it's Christmas, you get that sort of stuff, it makes sense.
Yeah, you're too taken by the new stuff. I remember you got that beer that was like a pale ale, and it was like, what was it, like? It was like a cake-flavoured pale ale or something.
Oh yeah.
Or was it, maybe it was a Christmas one, it was like mince pie something.
Uh,
Was it mince pie?
We had COVID. We had COVID that time, so it's hard to enjoy things when you're ill. Anyway.
So that was before, but...
Yeah, maybe they gave us COVID. Who knows?
Yeah, probably.
I did see one. Anyway, it's like a Stormtrooper beer that they're plugging out there, and I am kind of like...
I've seen that. Yeah, that's probably okay. Well, actually, I think that's just.
How many times do the stormtroopers get killed in the movies? Right, so you're kind of thinking they must be pissed. So it must be very good. Like,
yeah,
it must be. If you're working, if you're working for the Empire, I mean, that's grueling hours. You know, you're going to die. You know, things aren't going to go great. Yeah. You need to get shit faced. So
they don't. They don't invest much into the training of the stormtroopers, do they? That's to be honest. I don't even really know how to shoot anyone.
No,
they're always missing. They're always missing.
Target practice was not a key thing. It's just like, are you happy to wear this helmet to bed? And it's like, yeah, you got the job.
Exactly. We've spent a bit of time talking about Christmas. I imagine we'll do that in a couple more episodes. Mm-hmm. Do we have any movie? Little bits to get through before we get to our main event. Nothing for me. I have one thing. It's not so much a movie thing. It's more that I met a real life listener in the flesh.
I would, maybe this is the thing because you're still vague on this to me. This is still vague.
It's still vague to me, and I was there.
You were there. Why don't you explain what happened?
Well, I was out somewhere. I will not disclose.
It's still
details
very vague.
Of where I was because it's, you know, no one's business. Okay. I know. I was out. I bumped into someone, and I didn't know who he was. But you know, it's like when you have a few drinks, you start chatting to whoever's at the bar, whoever's nearby. You know, and this bloke, he had the craziest laugh I've ever heard. It was like the Joker's laugh, right? It was proper like. It was like that, and that was his genuine laugh because he did it a few times, and every time he did it, I was like, "What the fuck is this?" His laugh is insane, and that's the first thing I heard. And I looked across, and I was like, "What the hell? Like, that's a real laugh?" And anyway, eventually, I started talking to him about something. I can't remember what we bonded over, but he was a proper movie nerd, yep. Right? He was a big movie fan, huge. And we were talking about that, and then obviously because we were talking about that, I said, "Oh, I have a I do a movie podcast." He goes, "Oh, what's your podcast called?" And then I told him what it's called, and he went, "Really?" He's like, "I know that podcast." And I was like, "Oh," and he was like saying something about his cousin listened to it, and he's listened to it. So there you go.
So he didn't recognize.
But he was very
your
much
voice?
Like. He didn't recognize my voice, clearly, no. But I suppose you wouldn't after a few drinks, would you? But, I mean, he could have been lying to me. But he said him and his cousin have listened to the podcast or something like that. But I found it very, very bizarre. But he said his movie knowledge was insane. And then the video I sent you was meant to be him telling me that he listened to the podcast. But some reason he started talking about the director of Drive. And I don't know why.
I thought it was the honest thing to wake up to. I had a video from you. And it was a guy who basically said, the knowledge of this podcast is he was talking about obviously how knowledgeable our podcast was, and then he was saying how he knew stuff, and then suddenly he's talking about Nicholas Winding Refn, and then talking about and that's what I couldn't understand the Nicholas one. I was like, what's this? And then.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Like, does this guy know our podcast? I mean, is this guy saying that Nicholas Wine and Reppin was listening to our podcast, which I thought was insane?
I don't know.
I thought it was insane for a minute to think that Nicholas Wine and Reppin is sitting down and going, interesting. So I just it was all very surreal.
Maybe he was. If he is, and you're listening, Nicholas, thank you very much for listening. And also, if you're also listening, person I bumped into, thank you as well. But he probably doesn't remember the story as much as me either. So I imagine you will never get to the bottom of this. And it's just one of those moments in time that if I would have had five less drinks, maybe it would make sense. But also, it probably would have happened.
You take
the rough with the smooth.
Just like how your opportunistic side went, I'm going to record this, but then you just got a recording which is just so bizarre. As I said, and then I wake up in the morning and I see a video that you sent at 2 a.m. and I watch it, and I'm sober because I've woken up, so I'm looking at this with fresh eyes, and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, the fuck has he sent me here? This is the weirdest thing I have ever received from you. Yeah, it's odd.
It's not the weirdest thing ever caught on camera, though, because that is the next movie we're reviewing.
It's up there. I'll be honest with you, it's up there.
That's a segue of all time. Southland Tales. Do you know what? When I picked this movie, I picked it randomly. I picked it randomly because I saw a story about the director, Richard Kelly. Mm-hmm. And it was about how he's returning to do something on Amazon. And he was a Donnie Darko director. And I was sort of thinking, that's kind of like, what happened to him? Because he made such a huge movie in Donnie Darko. And then he directed The Box. And then he hasn't directed anything since on the big screen. Until he returns with The Night of the Prodigies, which is on Amazon Prime. And that's what opened the can of worms. And then I picked the movie Southland Tales. And I tell you what, boy, am I glad I picked it. Because this is a weird movie.
It's out there, isn't it? It's a movie. It's a perfect sophomore feature. It's like when you had the success of the first movie and you go to your second one. If you look at a lot of directors' filmographies, their second movie is the most ambitious thing they do, because they've got especially if their first one was successful, they got a bit of success under their wing, and so they've sort of been left off the lead, and they can go to weird and wonderful places. Southland Tales is a movie with many ideas. Too many ideas. And it's weird. I find this weird because Donnie Darko was a cult movie, right? It became a big movie through being seen on TV and on video, and it sort of picked up that momentum there. I've always found it strange how Southland Tales doesn't seem to have done that. This feels like such a cult movie, yet it feels like the cult is very small. There's no one really back in the Southland House corner, is it? And I wonder, is it just because it's just a tad bit too messy? Yeah, it's a very messy story. It's very bizarre. But, I mean, the world is a better place to have it in the movie curriculum.
Southland Tales. Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously it's 5 years after Donnie Darko. Donnie Darko was an interesting movie at the time anyway because of a few factors. One being that I think Richard Kelly was 23. He was very young when he wrote that movie. And when it came out, obviously because of the premise of the story that involves a plane crash, it came out just after 9/11. It came out on in October 2001, and the advertising for the movie was kind of halted a bit, wasn't it? Because obviously it features a plane crash.
Yeah,
and it was a very sensitive time to be advertising that sort of storyline. Obviously, it was made before. It came out at Sundance in January before. But it did affect its box office release. It made quite a bit of money. It probably made a lot more money in DVD sales, I'd say. I don't know how much it made. $10 million in US home video sales. So it made, like Matt Damon said in an interview recently, you know, the DVD sales back then were like a re-release of the cinema. Like, they would make almost as much money as they did in the cinema, sometimes more, which you wouldn't get now.
So
you wonder, a movie like this coming out now, and it still does okay box office, but it doesn't have that DVD bump as well. So it can affect it. And obviously, went on to make Southland Tales, which is a bigger budget movie.
Did you see how much it grossed?
You know, It didn't do very well, and I think I know why.
Amazingly bad. I'm almost shocked how bad it did.
Yeah, it's not good. 17 million budget. The budget of Donnie Darko was 4.5, so it's a massive, massive increase on money to play around with. And he made under $400,000.
And that's worldwide.
That's worldwide. And I'll be honest, I'd never heard of this movie, really. I'd never heard of this movie. And it's so interesting because the way it was such a... I think it's such a risk the way he did it, but I really respect him doing it, was bringing in, purposely bringing in a cast of people that he felt had unexplored acting talents, and they were sort of the pigeonholed actors who wouldn't be given this sort of role. And I do think a few of them came out really well in this movie. Like, you've got Dwayne Johnson, I think, in this movie. I don't think he's done a movie like this since.
No, he's played in the safe lane for a lot of his career.
Yeah, this is his most interesting role ever, I would say. I can't think of a better role. I wouldn't say it's his best. I would say it's his best acting performance, his best role, but it's his most interesting role.
It's unique. And this was early on in his career as well. So he's probably only been in the business for about, 3 years, maybe?
Yeah, and he's pretty good at it as well. Pretty damn good in it.
He's good in it. The fact that the actors who are in it, I don't think are bad actors. And, like, I can see where he's going with it. Like, I mean, Justin Timberlake, for example, I wouldn't say he's miscast, because you see Justin Timberlake in future movies like The Social Network, and you know that he's a good actor. He just needs the right material to work with. But his character's weird, and I didn't really understand the point of his character a little bit.
Nor did I. No. He was narrating the movie, weren't he? Really?
And then he's got the weird, bizarre musical number, which Richard Kelly stands by. But I really don't know where that's gone. Like, we just break out into this. He's not even singing. You've got Justin Timberlake, who you know is a good singer, miming a song and dancing to it. And I just find that so bizarre.
Yeah, it's that scene is weird. It is kind of like that was one of the moments I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Didn't really understand. It is crazy how Richard Kelly, he really likes this movie. He said it's his proudest accomplishment. I'm guessing you watched the 2.5-hour version of the movie. Yeah, that's the one that I think didn't make it to Sundance or something. It was like unfinished when it went there.
I think it was Cannes. It was because it
Cannes. Sorry, yeah, Cannes. Yeah. Sent to Cannes. It was unfinished. And I think this 2.5-hour version is the version that Richard Kelly wants people to watch. It's long. When I saw it was 2.5 hours, I was like, "Fuck me! Why did I pick this?" It's like you really got to put yourself through something for 2.5 hours.
It is a bit of a chore to watch this movie because I wouldn't say. I can't say this movie is a bad movie, because I think often when we say a movie's bad, for me, a bad movie is a movie which is just terribly made, terribly acted, terribly written. I think of this is like someone making a nice smoothie, right? Someone's made a smoothie, but they've just put way too many ingredients in the fucking thing and then just hit the blender and just blended it all. And it just tastes a bit weird. There's too much going on in this movie. The first time I saw it, I think it's one that watching it, I think this was the second time I saw it now. Watching it a second time and knowing that the first viewing, I didn't really like it and I found it confusing. I think going into it the second time was a lot more helpful to me because I know what I was expecting. So on the second viewing, I was picking out the things and I could tell that this is a movie about politics. This is a movie about the political nature of the country.
Yeah.
And this is about the Republicans and the Democrats. And there's a lot here, and there's also time travel. That is his main thing. All directors have this main, like, running theme throughout all their movies. And Richard Kelly's is time travel. He's obsessed with the idea of time. All three of his feature movies heavily involve time travel. It's just there's funny scenes in there. There's scenes here that made me chuckle. The staging of the police shootout scene was great when, you know, John Lovitz, again, a weird actor, another one of the weird actors that you wouldn't expect to see in that kind of, like, he looks like he's playing like a Nick Nolte kind of character. He's all like gruffly voice. And he goes in and he shoots them two celebrities. And then obviously the audio that the guys who are setting up this thing have got, obviously the blood squibs attached. And as obviously he's really shooting them. So they're shooting off the blood squib because they think it's a blank. I thought that was hilarious. Yeah. That did make me laugh.
It has its clever moments, yeah. Definitely.
Just spread it apart. I think, like, if you could separate this movie into three movies, I think you'd have three good movies. But they're putting them all together,
yeah,
and you've just got something that's rather confusing. But it's not bad. It's just way too much there, and it's like too many ingredients.
Mm. Yeah, I think that probably is the problem. But there's a lot to love about this movie. I mean, for starters, the music by Moby, I think it's great throughout the whole movie. So it's really unique. It really like sets like quite a nice tone. I don't even know how to describe the style, but
I like when a musician scores.
Sounded great.
I always find it interesting when a musician does the score, because I think they just bring something different. And this is rare. I don't think Moby's ever scored before. So this is kind of a rare turn for him.
It is, yeah. It is. And it's kind of cool that he said, yes, I think he was a big Donnie Darko fan, wasn't he? So, you know, he was using up his Donnie Darko credits that he'd had in the bank, Richard Kelly, to really put this one together. And it is kind of an interesting one, because you would almost think as well, he didn't need to do a movie like this where he thought, I'm going to get a cast together who are pigeonholed. And, you know, if you look at the billing, you say, it's kind of a weird cast. Would I enjoy this movie? He could have gone bigger than that if he really wanted to. I don't think anyone would have stopped him from doing that. And I think he probably would have had a lot of people saying yes to him after Donnie Darko too. So it is an interesting turn. Do you reckon he maybe sits back and reflects on that and maybe regrets not exploring a different movie before he did this, or maybe a different approach? Do you think?
Yeah, I think you got to strike when the iron's hot. I'm trying to think.
You think this is one maybe for later on in his career that he could have done, where he could have done pigeonholed actors?
No, I think the time he did it was the right time, because I'm trying to think, there was a director that said something, I can't remember who it was, who basically said he was going to put everything in one movie because he did not know if he'd ever get the chance to make that movie again. And I remember watching a De Palma movie, a documentary called De Palma, about Brian De Palma, which is fantastic. You should watch that documentary if you can, which is directed by Noah Baumbach, and they just sit in a room and they go through Brian De Palma's filmography. And Brian De Palma always says that you don't really map out your what movies you're going to do. They just come to you at the given time. The movie you make is the movie that was presented to you at the time. You don't really get to pick your movie. It's more about being right place, right time. So if he never made Southland Tales after Donnie Darko, the reality is probably he would have never made it again, because let's be honest, you know, Donnie Darko's success, who knows if his second feature would have had that. I mean, looking at his career now, if he said, let's say he did The Box as the second one, there's no way he would have been able to make Southland Tales. So true. I think Southland Tales is his passion project, and that's probably why he calls it his misunderstood child. I think it was, I think it was a good timing for him. It's interesting that, I mean, he defends it, and like many artists, the thing they hate the most is their most popular thing, and the thing they love the most is their most underrated thing. And of course, yeah, he's probably tired of all the Donnie, because I imagine in interviews it's always Donnie Darko this, Donnie Darko that. Same like with Quentin Tarantino, it's probably always Pulp Fiction this, Pulp Fiction that. But sometimes you want to talk about your lesser one because you want to give that a little bit more, put it more into the public eye or notoriety, yeah.
Yeah, it probably is. You probably want to talk about this a lot more. I think there's a lot more to this as well. This is like a really interesting approach and a really it's a bizarre movie. But do you know what? There was elements of it that when I was watching this movie, it was the same sort of feeling I had when I was watching Everything Everywhere All at Once. You know, I knew I was strapped into something unique and weird, and I was sort of like just open to it the whole way. And that's kind of what I had with that movie, where it's like you can't really look too under the microscope, otherwise you won't enjoy it. Like, so when you get to the final scene of this movie and they're on a floating ice cream truck, and then he fires a rocket launcher at the what was the ship called?
So much something in this movie to remember.
I can't. He fires the rocket at the ship and then it blows up, and it's just like, that is such an insane scene. When you really think about it, that is an insane scene. They're in the air because the two same souls meet each other and touch hands, shake hands, and then suddenly they're floating off into the sphere. The poor guy who's like, dude, man, dude, bro, man, that guy is the hero of the movie, really, at the end.
And with the final line, I'm a pimp and pimps don't commit suicide. Which, I mean, it's such a terrible line, but I reckon when he wrote it, it must have sounded fantastic. But there are bits that I find just intriguing. I think the cast is the most intriguing thing.
It's crazy.
Because we've talked about Justin Timberlake, we've talked about John Lovitz and Dwayne Johnson. We haven't talked about Sarah Michelle,
Sean William Scott
who I do think they tapped into something that he is an actor that is known as Stiffland, and he's been pigeonholed into that role. But he's a lot more, I've seen him where he's a lot more bigger than that. And he's always been unexplored. Sarah Michelle Gellar, she does feel the most, weirdly to me, she feels the most miscast in this one, because of who she's asked to play, and you don't ever expect her to play that role. And that's the one I always had the hardest time getting my head around.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to how she was pigeonholed.
Well, she was like the girl next door.
Buffy.
Strong, independent vampire slut thing, yeah.
Yeah, she was more pigeonholed, I guess, in that sense. But I don't know if she was as pigeonholed as the rest, maybe.
No.
She did The Grudge. She did The Grudge before that. That was kind of quite a different role.
She did Cruel Intentions, which she's very conniving. She wasn't. But on this one, I did feel like... I thought that she was miscast. Like, I did think that wasn't a role that she could do very well. I just thought the kind of, I don't know, because if you're playing a porn star, I think you've got to look more like a porn star, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Interestingly, looking at her filmography, she didn't do a lot on cinema, did she?
No.
For a while. She did... Well, the last thing she did was Veronica Decides to Die, which I don't know what that is. And then after that, I watched this movie on Netflix, Do Revenge. I watched this movie and saw her in it, and I didn't at that point think, oh, this is her first movie in over 10 years. I didn't think that at all. I thought, oh, yeah, I don't see her much anymore. That's sort of what I felt when I was watching that movie. So that's quite interesting. She came back for that movie. It's been so long. So you go back on her filmography, and Southland Tales is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 movies ago on her filmography.
I think she had a family that she's like put family ahead of family first. Family ahead of, yeah.
Fair play.
The other one we didn't talk about, and it's such a small little minor role, is Kevin Smith appears in this movie, like, heavy in makeup.
Yeah.
Can't even tell it's him.
Very heavy in makeup. Well, as soon as he starts talking, you know, straight away. Yeah. When I saw him, I was like, is that Kevin Smith? And he starts talking, I went, oh, yeah, it's Kevin Smith. But he was quite good in this role. Like, but this is, I feel like he would almost love to play that sort of role. Like, he embraces those weird roles.
I don't think there's, like, a bad performance.
No.
I think there's just, like, one, there's way too many fucking characters. Like, there's way too many characters. And, like, we keep jumping to different people, and you got to remember who they are, what position they're in. Like, what they doing? Like, I couldn't understand. I couldn't. All the threads didn't always align for me. Like, I thought, like, it felt like he was writing it, and then he forgot what he was writing. Like, he put it away for like a month, and then came back to it, rewrote some bits, and because I didn't understand the whole the police setup bit of getting the two celebrities shot for real was actually what the activist was actually trying to do, and she was in cahoots with the bad policeman. It all got a bit way too confusing. It was too much going on. It got way too confusing. By the end, when they were talking about different timelines and there were two people, I sat there and went, oh, whatever, yeah, just go with it. You just do your thing. I'm not even going to contest you anymore. You've jumbled up my brain so much that I'm just like, whatever, man. It's cool. You play in your sandbox.
I think that's what works against it. It is complicated. So, like, if you're really not following it, it kind of felt like the whole movie was three different movies crammed into one. It was almost like you needed a movie to get to know this part, and you needed another movie to get to know this part, another movie to get to know this part, and then it would all make sense. It almost felt like, even though it's 2.5 hours long, it did feel kind of rushed through everything, didn't it? Like, each part could have, like, the whole bit about the draft being introduced and it being the Third World War could have been a whole movie. And then you talk about fluid karma, and then you talk about the timeline, but to have it all into one, there's a lot going on. And you're like, who the fuck? Like surveillance on citizens. Like, it's all very interesting stuff. It's all very interesting. But there is fucking loads happening at once, isn't there? It is almost impossible to follow.
My question to you, do you think, I mean, given how things are these days, do you think this would be better? As so many movies have turned into TV shows or miniseries, do you think this would be better if Richard Kelly turned this into a TV show / a miniseries?
Probably, yeah. And I think is it something that he had maybe been talking about? He sort of spoke about it last year, about developments of turning it into like a franchise, with the intention of the original cast as well, which I think is madness. Imagine having that kind of cast back together.
Can't see Dwayne Johnson getting involved in this. Everyone else, no, maybe, but I can't see Dwayne. I just think he knows his career trajectory. He knows who he wants to be. He wants to be, you know, he basically, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he wants to be the biggest action star in the world. I really don't think Southland Tales is going to do that for him. I think he probably feels he'd probably be bigger than the movie now. So I can't see him going for it. But if they were going to recast somebody, and they wanted that same sort of feel of somebody who gets pinch or told, maybe your favourite guy, Jason Momoa.
I wouldn't watch it. That would instantly ruin it.
I mean, he's doing that. What's that? Slumberland now on Netflix.
Is he pigeonholed? Is he pigeonholed, or is he just very good?
He's known for making crap movies, so like perfect for this, I think.
I don't think he's pigeonholed. I've seen him in various roles and been like, he is not good. He is where he is because he is a unique looking man, and there are mums up and down the country who go, oh yeah, he's all right. You know, I mean, he's
what
that
John
sort
Cena
of, like,
if you're gonna go keep a wrestler base, John Cena.
I would go for that. I would happily accept another wrestler. I think is John Cena pigeonholed? I think John Cena's actually proved himself as not a bad actor in the slightest. I think he's actually quite good.
He always plays comedic roles. You haven't seen him in like a serious role.
Yeah, he's like Mark Wahlberg being funny, isn't he? Like, it feels unexpected in kind of a way, you know. Yeah, I'd accept him. Maybe he's a bit too old for the role, because you think about the time when Dwayne took it. How old would he have been? I mean, Johnson is only 45. How old is Dwayne Johnson now? Apparently, it's going to shock me how old Dwayne Johnson is, isn't it? Going to be shocked, because he looks exactly the same.
50.
He is 50. Oh. Okay, so he's only 5 years older than John Cena. What the fuck? How does that work out?
He started young, though.
How's he only 5 years older than John Cena?
In the WWE. What about Roman Reigns? What about if they bring Roman Reigns? I mean, he's related to Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Kind of looks kind of similar.
He does have a similar look. Yeah, that's not a bad shout, actually.
There you go, Richard.
It's not a bad shout.
This is
that could work.
Out to Richard
that's
Kelly.
Kind of like that's kind of like Momoa and
if
The Rock.
Dwayne and Jason had a baby, they had a Roman Reigns. Yeah.
That's not a bad one. That's not a bad one. Maybe he wouldn't go down a wrestler route. I don't think. What, has Roman Reigns been in a movie yet?
No.
Maybe he's been in a WWE.
He's been
movie
pigeonholed as a wrestler all his life, and he could be.
He has. He's been doing some voiceover work. He did Rumble, whatever that is. The Wrong Missy. He was in Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Was he?
Apparently, he played Hobbs. Matteo Hobbs, whoever that was, which had The Rock
in
it.
Because it
Luke's brother. Who's Luke? He played Dwayne Johnson's
is that his
brother.
Nephew or there cousin? I can't remember. Roman Reigns is either Dwayne's nephew or cousin.
He played his brother in Fast and Furious. I don't know. Let's have a look. He is. It normally tells you, doesn't it? It's not telling me at all. He was an American footballer as well. I didn't know that.
Same as The Rock.
He is a member of the wrestling. I can't pronounce this. I'm going to get it wrong.
The Samoan family.
And basically, which includes. Rikishi. Yeah, Rikishi, Umaga, the Tonga kid.
The Ugos.
Yes. Yeah, stuff like that. I don't know. He's a good shout, though. He's a very good shout.
Casting agents right here.
Do you think the rest you'd bring back? Could you imagine? Where's Sean William Scott now?
So I don't know anything about this. Is it going to be set in this time, or is it going to be set in the now, in the crystal now? I think they'd have to recast everybody. I don't think anybody's going to come back to this movie, if I'm honest. You'd have to recast everybody.
No. Yeah, Justin Timberlake, I can't imagine him coming back either.
No.
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, I can see him coming
maybe
back.
Maybe a push. Sean William Scott, I feel like, would be likely to come back.
Yeah, I don't know about Sarah Michelle Gellar. I'm guessing the reason she doesn't do a lot of work is more her preference than not being offered roles. So I reckon she'd only come back if it was interesting enough for her.
Yeah, yeah. And probably, maybe in a small... I think her character as well is probably quite difficult for her to play at this point, in a bit of porn star. Mm. When you have a family, she may take that into consideration as well. Being the big porn mum on screen, I don't know if she wants to do that. interesting. Very interesting. But this movie is like... It's one of those movies that I'm glad I've seen it. And I would recommend it to people. But I'd be like, it's a weird one. And you'll probably hate it. I can see why people hated it and people didn't like it. It's so easy to just be like, that was a load of shit. So, I mean, when things are too complicated and like there's too much going on, you go, well, that was a load of shit. I didn't understand any of that. That must be terrible. You know, I think that's probably... Richard Kelly probably has that kind of grudge against people that maybe hate the movie because they're like, you don't get it. Like, you don't get it.
That is a thin running theme of his movies, though. I even find that with Donnie Darko. I mean, you can go on the internet and you can find these theories of what Donnie Darko is about and all the timeline stuff. I find Donnie Darko confusing.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of it. It's a big cult movie. And I'm like, yeah, it's good. I don't think it's great, a masterpiece that everyone else seems to like hover that title above it. But I'm not huge into it. So his career has never been one I've been fascinated with, but I do find it fascinating. I was going through his filmography, and I think he's got a movie coming out soon. Is it Corpus Christi or something like that? That he's
Richard Kelly.
That he's written. Corpus Christi, which is in pre-production, which is about an Iraq war veteran teams up with a wealthy business owner in Texas, which sounds very simple story. So I'm wondering, like, where's the timeline going to come into this?
Yeah.
But it's had nothing.
Simple is...
You look at the...
Does he do simple?
I don't think he... I think... Listen, I think he puts up what he likes, and... I was listening to Quentin Tarantino the other day because he's released a book and he was on the Howard Stern show, and they were talking about what he thought his best movie is, and he thinks his best movie is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And they asked him, like, do you watch your movies? He said, oh yeah, I watch them all the time. He said, I make them for me. You know, I make movies for me. The whole idea is that I like the movies. And so if Richard Kelly's going by that, he's making movies that he would want to watch, and he does watch, and then maybe that's why he loves Southland Tales. He's made the movie that he has always wanted to love.
I respect that. You watched The Box. I didn't have time to watch The Box. What? How would you describe that in terms of, you know, you've now watched all three of his features?
It's the least ambitious of the three. It's still interesting, but at the end of it, you go, I don't really understand you. Do you know the premise of the story?
No, go.
The premise of the story is that Frank Langier comes to the house of Cameron Diaz and John Marston, and he brings him this box, this mysterious box with a button on it. And he says, you can press this button and your dreams come true, or you get money or something, but in return, somebody in the world dies. So if they press this box, somebody dies in the world. And wow. and that is really interesting. And it's based on a Twilight Zone episode, I believe. I think it's like a fully extended Twilight Zone episode. And it's intriguing, it's interesting, it raises interesting ideas, but at the end when you watch it and you get to the final part, you go, oh, this feels complicated again. It feels a bit convoluted. Which all of his movies have that running theme. They're all convoluted.
It may be something he does on purpose. He's like, I don't almost want you to get.
He might be smarter than all of us combined. Maybe that's it. I have a feeling that he knows what he's talking about when he talks about the paradoxes of time. I think that he really has invested a lot of time in it. He's read a lot about this. He has got a good understanding of it, or at least a better understanding of it than me. But sometimes, you know, we talked about where you have to handhold somebody into a movie. I need a lot of handholding into his movies. I need someone to say, this is the time, and this is where you are.
You always need him sitting next to you, and you look at him, and he goes, okay, so this is the... He'll pause it and be like, okay, so this is it. You're like, and press play again, and then pause it. You need that director's commentary. And I regret not listening to an interview with him before we shot this podcast. Been a busy week, but I am intrigued by the man himself, and I'm almost kind of being optimistic here, but do you reckon he is gettable for us to talk to him? I think he's an interesting director for us to potentially interview, and I'm going to reach out to him and hopefully we can get him on. I've done this before. I've put my neck on the line before. I've gone out and got someone. I did it with Vince. Right, put my neck on the line and said I want to try and find him, and we did find him. So that's the tactic I'm going to use. So this one is I'm going to reach out to him and hopefully we can speak to him, because I think he's not just and he seems smart as well. He's not making dumb movies. He's making pretty maybe too complex movies for your average film goer, and I think that's maybe where he goes.
He's making movies that he wants to make, and I appreciate anybody who doesn't stay in the safe lanes. I mean, would you rather have a movie like this out in the world, or would you rather have a movie that just feels like you know every way it's going to go, and it basically is unambitious? I like ambitious movies. I like movies that are way too ambitious, and sometimes they, hey, listen, in an alternative reality, maybe Southland Tales was a huge hit. Maybe, you know, it could have easily been a huge hit, or it could have easily been a massive failure. And I think that's what you do when you take like a massive gamble on something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you brought up a brilliant pairing, actually, and I didn't actually think about this. Everything, Everywhere, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is a brilliant movie to compare to Southland Tales, because that's like the two ways it could have gone. I mean, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is so out there that it could have easily been like Southland Tales and just bombed. But it took the other, and it's become a huge hit. It could be an Oscar contender. So I think that just goes to show you that it is very, the margins are very thin.
I mean, the margins are extremely thin. And to quote our good friend Vince Villeneuve, if you knew how much it took to make any movie, they'd all win Oscars.
Yeah.
I think it's something, he said something like that. Says something like that. Something, you know, the work that goes in, you know. Yeah. I imagine this is probably one that also probably hurts a little bit, because you put so much into it, writing, making it, the CGI, everything that goes into it, and then you put it out and people are like, nah, I didn't enjoy that. Because you'd be like,
I think the filmmaking quality of this movie is really good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any... In terms of the actual filming of it, there's nothing bad about it. You know, it looks beautiful. The cinematography is nice. The music, we talked about the music. The acting's good. I just, like we said, there's just way too much in there. Too convoluted. And maybe, like, if it was a TV show, or if it was... this was always going to be what it was. This was 2006. There wasn't any other option than for this to be a movie and to be a 2.5-hour movie. I can imagine there's a cut that is 5 hours long, and I can imagine that that is probably a better version of this movie.
Yeah, it probably is. I don't know. It's one of those ones. It is so ambitious. You're right. It's going to go one or the other way, isn't it? It's going to go one way or the other. And unfortunately, this one just didn't go the way he imagined. But hey, he's a director who I'd love to see back on the big screen. Corpus Christi. Let's hope that one is a big movie. Let's hope so.
One can hope.
One can hope. We're rooting for you, Richard. We're rooting for you.
Oh, mate. I'd rather have someone...
You watched one of his short films as well. Goodbye Place.
Yeah, so there were five. He's actually not got a lot on his filmography. It's really slim pickings. I mean, he's wrote a little bit more, but yeah, he made two shorts, one called Visceral Matter, which I didn't get a chance to watch. Couldn't find it, but there was another one called The Goodbye Place. Really interesting. You could see the kind of these are the movies he likes. He likes to make very intriguing sort of puzzle movies. They're like, they are mind benders. I think that's probably the right term. He likes to bend your mind and make you think about it. The Goodbye Place is basically about people disappearing. It's a narration of this little boy, and this little boy's disappeared and he's gone to the Goodbye Place. And there's little bits throughout it where there's these other characters that are there and then they disappear. And it's very intriguing. But it's short. But short movies are always a little bit like head scratchers because you don't have enough time to tell the story. But who would have known that would have been the legacy throughout his career, is that they just like not long enough to tell you a coherent answer of what they're actually watching, which is good. I mean, you don't want to be spoon-fed information, but you also sometimes need to have the cheat code.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, is it? There's having your cake and eating it too, isn't it? I guess. Sometimes you do just want to know, but yeah, interesting. Donnie Darko, we know, obviously, we've touched on Donnie Darko. I'm surprised you're not a fan, actually. That's new information for me. I thought that would have been...
I like it. I like it. We did it not too long ago on the Battle Royale.
We did.
One. And it's a good movie. I like it. But maybe it's just for the fact that you got to remember at the time, not so much now, but the time around that time, everybody loved that movie. That was the movie that every film geek was bragging about that movie. Every film geek loved that movie. And, you know, I'm like, well, I don't like that movie so much now because you all like it. It always lessens it because, you know, sometimes people put things so high on a pedestal that you just like pick it out and go, oh, it's a bit of a smudge on that camera lens on that scene right there. You know, you just nitpick a little bit more than usual. I like it. Yeah. I mean, it helped probably launch Jake Gyllenhaal's career. I think that was a big help for him. And it's got some interesting scenes in it, and like seeing Seth Rogen in it's quite interesting, like a young Seth Rogen just playing a bully in it, and Patrick Swayze is also in the movie, and there's a lot I like about it, but I'm not, I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's a good movie. I enjoy watching it, and I'll watch it again, but I'm not in love with the movie. But it's his best movie, also, I would say, by a margin.
I really liked the movie, personally. I really liked the movie. I think it was probably, for a period of time when I was younger, probably in my top 10 for a long time. It's one of those weird movies. It has a real nice, I wouldn't say nice, like a real core... raw sort of feeling to it. It kind of feels like you're in a dream as well, you know, very like a fever.
Yeah, very surreal.
That's the best way to describe it. Very surreal movie, but great. I imagine most people have seen this movie by now. The background of it is more interesting as well. It was, there was something about it knocking off a movie on the greatest independent films of all time. What movie was it? I swear it knocked a movie off. I don't know. But, yeah, great movie. I never saw S. Darko, though.
I've never seen it. Did he write it, or was it just based on characters?
It was based on characters.
Right. Never seen it. That's about his sister, isn't it?
I think so.
That's a hard movie to make a sequel of, isn't it? Donnie Darko, especially if Donnie's not in the movie.
You know, yeah, it is. It is. But they will do that when they see success. They're like, how can we get more money from this? What else can we squeeze out of this movie? I wonder what his involvement was in that, actually. He wasn't involved at all. In telling you not to say that work on a new sequel is in progress. Yeah, do you reckon they'd make another Darko movie? I don't think they would.
The story's been told. Like, I don't see where else you could take that story.
That would be an interesting thing to talk to him about as well, S. Darko, because he said he hadn't read the script. He had absolutely no involvement with the production, and he said, "Nor will I ever be involved." So that is really interesting. He didn't have a single bit of involvement
with S. Darko,
considering he wrote the original. Yeah, considering he wrote the original.
That's probably because, I don't know, it depends, you know how things are. He probably doesn't... The story was told, you know, he wanted to explore other things. I don't think he's a guy who would want to loiter too long on a movie. He wants to get on to the next project, which, you know, you just put it out there and sometimes they've got mass appeal or they don't. I've always I've always found it. I would like to know why he hasn't made a movie in years. Is it just funding, do you reckon? Is it just because he can't get people to fund his movies?
It's kind of hard to know, isn't it? It's hard to know. I don't know. Probably. I think once, the problem is you have a movie like Southland Tales that we've been speaking about, and yet it's such a box office flop that does that. I think that's probably a black mark on your CV, isn't it? In the film industry, where they're like, oh, we can't trust him with too much money. And I suppose without DVD sales as well, it's probably harder to get movies made, you know, without that guarantee of revenue coming in.
Although direct to stream, I could see his movies would play better on direct to stream, because they are movies that you just ran. Let's have Donnie Darko got successful. Just if you randomly found it, you'd give it more of a chance if you found it on Netflix than to go to the cinema and watch it.
Exactly, that sort of cult following. Well, I guess we're going to put this movie in a good, bad, what the fuck.
Oh, what the fuck.
And I think it's a rare inclusion. Yeah, a what the fuck. I think a what the fuck list is relatively small. So I would say that's an achievement in itself. Always good to find a what the fuck. Nice to have stumbled across that one. So yeah. I'll get in contact. And Richard, if you're not listening, Richard, we know that Nicholas is, so...
And Nicholas might know Richard, so 6 degrees of separation, we'll find you somehow.
Could be a connection there. Right, we'll move on to the next part of our podcast.
Okay.
And the next part is what we're watching next week, because I didn't prepare anything.
I was going to say, you did not tell me what the next part was. So next week, as you know, next week starts December.
Yeah.
So
the first festive episode.
We have to start our Christmas season, and we're going to...
We do, and I'll get a Christmas jingle as well, I'll tell you, and it'll be a nice surprise. I'll get a Christmas theme jingle.
I thought you were just going to be there with the old jingles. Just on the next episode. By the way. Our next movie, I've decided that it's one that when we did our top 50 Christmas movies last year, I'd never got a chance to actually watch it. I've always wanted to see it because there was a lot of hoo-ha when it first originally came out in the 80s. And I've decided that we're going to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night from 1984. Now, this is about, I'll tell you the synopsis IMDb gives you. Little Billy witnesses his parents getting killed by Santa after being warned by his senile grandpa that Santa punishes those who are naughty. Now, Billy's 18 and out of the orphanage, and he's just become Santa himself. So this kind of feels like...
That's a crazy story.
This feels a bit like Michael Myers, but he's in a Santa costume. So Little Billy's going around killing people with Santa. This movie... absolutely got torn to shreds by a lot of parents saying that their kids got frightened seeing the trailers. The story of this movie is fantastic. I wonder if the actual movie's any good. But they try to get this movie banned and the trailers banned because they say, oh, my kid's watching this, he's having nightmares, he thinks Santa's going to kill people because the adverts were so creepy. Probably back then, they're probably very tame if we watch them now. But, of course, as you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. So the fact that this movie was receiving such a backlash by people trying to get it banned, more people went and saw the fucking movie. So it did pretty bad. Good for it. You know, it raised awareness for it. And
especially for a horror movie. That's what you want.
And they've made, like... movie. At the count, I think there's like 5 or 6 of these movies. So this is a franchise upon itself. And you can find this movie on Shudder.
Love it. I didn't cancel my subscription because I keep forgetting. So that's great.
So it's on...
Second movie I've watched. I've paid them about 50 quid to watch two.
There you go. So that's the Christmas season right there. Silent Night, Deadly Night, because we're going to start it in a very festive period. where Santa's killing everybody. So that's how we're going to do that.
I think that's a good way to, I think that's a good way to kick it off. I feel that.
Listen, after our ranking list, which is coming later on in December, I'm actually not that hard up at watching Santa kill people because I feel like I've watched a lot of shitty Christmas movies lately. So I'm kind of like looking forward to a little bit of carnage now. The Christmas spirit is long dead.
It is long dead. It is long dead. And I've always been intrigued. You know, this has been what I've been intrigued by. I feel like I remember going to Blockbuster and seeing that DVD cover, Silent Night, Deadly Night, because it is a fantastic film poster.
Do you see the
He's going down the chimney. His hand... outside of the chimney with an axe in his hand. That is a brilliant poster.
It's just great. Silent Night, Deadly Night. And it says there, you made it through Halloween. Now try and survive Christmas. And then also, what's it say there? Underneath the Silent Night, Deadly Night? He knows when you've been naughty. That's another one.
That's great. That's great. Right. I'm looking forward to watching this one. The Mike Myers Christmas, basically.
This is the Jingle Jangle Mike Myers version.
All right, next week, the festive period begins in style. See you
until then.
Bye-bye. Bye.